Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good afternoon and welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And we are right now in the midst of a conversation called The Love Project. If you haven't been with us for the past couple of weeks, I highly encourage you to go online and to watch or listen to the last couple conversations as we've kind of built the foundation for this. And we're looking at how Jesus, as he steps into our lives, how he shifts our vision of love. All of us, we have a vision for our lives of who we're becoming and what we want to become. And Jesus steps in and he shifts that vision, specifically as it pertains to love. Because within that vision, we have a vision of what relationships are going to look like and what love's going to look like. And Jesus steps into our lives and he says, yeah. You think love looks like this, but it actually looks like this. You thought that love worked like this, but it actually works like this. And he's shifting our vision, not just with what he says, but with what he does and the way in which he loves us. And so we've been unpacking that. Last week we looked at how he shifts our vision from something that's spontaneous to something that is intentional. And this week we're going to build on that. Now, as Anthony said, if you have kids in this service, you may want to take them to the parents area so that you can censor this a little bit better so that you're not just running out in the middle of this conversation. Because as we build on this today, I want to talk to you about the origin of our vision. And what I mean by that is this. As we're developing our vision for love, our vision starts with us. It starts with me. It's all about what I want, about what I want to experience, what I want my life to look like. And it's compiled in a lot of different ways. It has to do with relationships that we've seen and movies that we've watched. All these different things factor into this vision that we're creating, that we've been talking about. But it all begins with me. Maybe you've never thought about this before, but it's interesting. You developed your vision of what relationships should look like and what your relationship should look like and what love looks like before you ever met the person that you love. Think about that for a second. For most of us, our vision of what a relationship looks like and what love looks like really has nothing to do with the person that we love because it was developed before we ever even met them. We build this idea, but it's built around us. We have a vision of love that's built around us and it serves us. It serves us. But then Jesus steps in. Jesus steps in and says, "No, I want to present you with a different vision of love. You see, my vision of love doesn't start with me. It starts with the ones that I love." And from the beginning of the story, I planned on how I was going to love you. Jesus didn't bring us into the story because he thought, man, I'm going to be really loved. Jesus didn't bring us into the story because he thought, man, I'm going to be really served. He brought us into the story because he says, from the very beginning, I brought you in because I wanted to serve you. There's this really powerful passage. Jesus is talking to his disciples and he's calling them to understand this. And he says this, listen to what it says. Mark chapter 10, verse 45, Jesus is speaking to his disciples and he says, for even the Son of Man, he says, even me, he's trying to help them understand leadership in this context. He says, even me, you have to understand something. He says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And as we've talked about in this series, this wasn't just something that he just felt in the moment and so he acted. No. This was intentional. This was planned before the entire story, before God set this entire thing into motion. He had planned to serve you. And his plan, as he laid this out, it's not about how he was going to be served or how he was going to be loved. No, it was all about how he was going to love and serve you. And for some of you, you're here today and you're trying to figure out who Jesus is and whether or not you can trust him. You need to understand something. You're not an accident. You were created intentionally to be here. And Jesus not only intended for you to be here, but he intentionally went to that cross and gave his life for you. He intentionally, as Philippians 2 says, he gave up everything that was rightfully his because he wanted the ones that he loved, which is you. And from the beginning, the vision wasn't shaped around him. The vision was shaped around how he would love and serve the ones that he loved, which is you. Jesus comes in and he presents us with a drastically different vision than our vision. A vision that's built around something drastically different than our vision. Because again, our vision is built around us. And this is the way we live our lives. We create these visions of what romance is going to look like and relationships are going to look like and what love is going to look like. And then we go out into the world and we interview people for that position. We create the movie. This is what my movie's going to look like. This is what my story's going to look like. This is what my marriage is going to look like. This is what my relationship's going to look like. And then we go out and we call it dating. What it is it's an audition process for the role in my movie. And I'm interacting with you and trying to figure out, okay, do you fit my vision? And will you serve my vision? And you're interviewing me and trying to figure out, will you serve my vision? And do you fit inside of my story? And there's this elaborate audition process, which is why I love how Anthony talks about it. He says, when you start dating, you don't actually meet the other person. You meet their representative, the person that they send ahead of them to represent them. And you watch that video, and it's so true. We lie to each other all the time. You're like, oh, I love watching football all Sunday. Some of you are married and you feel completely deceived because when you were dating, she loved to watch football all Sunday and now you can't watch football. No, I agree 100%. You should only eat organic. Now your food is awful and your grocery bill is out of this world. We go into this and we audition people. Figure out whether or not they fit our vision, whether or not they can help us to accomplish our vision. The amazing thing about this for me as I've been walking through this is we create the vision before we ever meet them, and when we meet them, we don't change it. We don't create a vision that serves them. We ask them to serve our vision. And when we meet someone, listen, come here. When we meet someone that we feel serves our vision well, that will play that role well, then we say, oh, I'm in love. The truth is, we don't love that person. We love our vision. Pay attention to this. This is so true for so many of us. We don't actually love that person. We love our vision, and we think that they're going to help us to realize it. And so we say, oh, I fell in love. But then, the moment that they fail to do that, the moment that they fail to serve that vision, the moment that their vision contradicts with our vision, all of a sudden we feel very differently about them. You say, I don't know what happened. I love them, but then the reality was you never really loved them. You loved the vision, and when they couldn't help you accomplish it, they were no longer of use to you. And so we move on to find someone else who can help us accomplish that vision. Which is why for some of us, we move from person to person to person to person to person to person to person. We're trying to figure out who can help us accomplish what I really love, which is my vision. Which is also why for some of you, as we talked about in week one, you're in committed relationships and you're furious at the person that you're married to because they're screwing up your vision. And you live your life frustrated and angry because they're screwing up your vision. And you live that way long enough, and eventually you're going to come to the point where you say, I need someone new. When I began to prepare for this series, I did not realize how this was going to hit me. I didn't realize the depth of this. And a couple weeks ago, I sat down, and it broke my heart. I'm telling you, it broke my heart because I looked at my vision, and my vision wasn't built around Anna. My vision wasn't built around my wife. It was built around me. Let me ask you something. Just be honest with yourself for a moment. Be honest with yourself for a moment. If you were to start from scratch, if you were to say, I'm going to dismantle this whole thing, and I'm going to build my vision of what love looks like and what relationships look like based not on me, but based entirely on the person that I love. And some of you here, you say, I'm single, this doesn't apply to me. No. This is for all relationships, even friendships, family members, whatever it be. If you were to sit down and say, okay, what does love look like based entirely on them? How different would it be? I was floored. I was floored by how different it would be if I were to start from scratch and build my vision entirely around my wife. And I'm willing to bet that it'd be drastically different for you too. Because we build our visions not based around who we love, but based around how we want to be loved. It's about me. And our vision serves me. And Jesus says, No. That's not love. Love builds a vision that serves them. Love is about serving them. It builds a vision based on who they are, how they experience love. Love serves them, not you. And he steps in and drastically shifts our vision of love, which is also why frequently in the scriptures, God talks to us about make sure that you're careful with who you get into romantic relationships with, who you get into intimate relationships with. Why? Because love is about serving the other person. You don't want to live the rest of your life serving a fool, so make sure that your commitment is tied to character. Because love is about serving them, developing a vision of how you can serve them. If you sit down this week and you give yourself the time to work through it, I think you'll find it changes so much of our vision when we start with them at the center, instead of us and the vision that we've created over the course of our lives. Love is about serving them. Now, as we've been walking through this, I've told you, we're not just going to talk about this theoretically, we're also going to talk about this practically. We're not just going to talk about this up here. We're going to talk about this as it pertains to tomorrow, how this impacts our day-to-day life, because God doesn't just come to us with theoretical ideas. He comes to us to teach us how to be able to follow Jesus, how to be able to love well. And if your vision shifts from being about you to being about them, it's going to impact a lot. It's going to impact so many different aspects of how you love and how you engage the world around you. But there's one in particular that I want to focus in on, and it's going to surprise you probably a little bit when we go into it, because you might not expect it at this point in the conversation, but I want to talk to you about how it impacts sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about how it impacts sex. The Apostle Paul, as he's spreading the message of who Jesus Christ is throughout the Roman Empire, he establishes a church in a place called Corinth. And for those of you who don't know who the Apostle Paul is, he was an individual who was at one time one of the greatest enemies of Christianity. But then he encounters Jesus' love in this amazing way that Jesus has served him and given his life for him. It changes everything. And he begins to spread the truth of Christianity and who Jesus is all throughout the Roman Empire. And as he's doing that, he establishes a church in a city called Corinth. And Corinth is a weird place when it comes to sex. And they've been told all these different things, and their culture interacts with sex in really strange ways. And so they ask Paul, they say, listen, how should we interact with sex based on what God has told us? What should this look like? And Paul writes back to them, and he's breaking this down in a lot of different ways, but as he's talking to them about how to interact with sex and whether you should be married or not be married, all these different questions that they had, that in the middle of that, he says something really interesting. And it shows how God's vision of love changes sex. Let me tell you this passage. It's found in the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 7, verse 3. It starts off, it says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come back together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. He says, I want for you inside of a marriage relationship, I want for you to see sex as an act of service. And you don't miss this about this passage, because this passage was radical when it was written. Because in the first century, men dominated their wives. And she did whatever he said to do. And all of a sudden, Paul's writing, he's saying, no, that's not the way it's going to look with you. He says, you guys are going to love and value each other equally. And so it's not just that she's going to say yes when he wants to, but he's going to say yes when she wants to. So this is going to be equal, and you're going to love each other and value each other equally. I mean, this would have been radical when it was written. And he says, I want for you to view sex differently. God wants for you to interact with sex differently and to look at it as an act of service. This is so different than the way that we look at sex, because typically the sex is all about, oh, you know, whether I'm in the mood. Well, I'm in the mood, I'm not in the mood. He says it doesn't really matter whether you're in the mood, it matters whether or not she's in the mood. So it doesn't really matter whether or not you're in the mood, it matters whether or not he's in the mood. Sex is this really unique way that God has created for you to be able to love someone else inside of a marriage relationship. For you to serve each other inside of a marriage relationship. And so he says, don't deprive one another of that, except for prayer. And I'm willing to bet there aren't many of you here who have said to your spouse, yeah, not tonight, I need to spend some time in prayer. I'm willing to bet that hasn't happened frequently. Just going out on a limb there. He says, no. It's not about you. So I want for you to serve one another in marriage in this really unique way. It's God created for sex to be this unique way that you serve one another in marriage. But if this is going to be true, there are certain things that need to shift in the way that we look at sex. Because it means first and foremost, wives, that you have to let go of culture's lie that this is just a physical experience for him. One of the things that drives me crazy, it bothers me so much, is when I hear people say, well, for women, sex is emotional, but for men, it's not. That is not true. That is not true. And wives inside of our culture have been told, no, this is just a physical thing. He needs a physical release, and that's what this is. No. This is the way in which he loves someone. Men are designed to love in this way. Men are physical beings, and we relate to people in physical ways. I love to watch this with my boys. I've got three young boys, and they're constantly communicating to one another that they care about one another. You know how they do that? They tackle each other at full force in my living room. And if they have been apart from one another for any period of time, it is like game on. We are going to wrestle, and I want for you to know how special you are to me. And it is a physical communication of affection. It really is. And they love each other because of that. And in that way, and he wants to love you in this way, but our culture has so perverted this. And it's just turned it into this physical thing. No. He wants to love you in this way, which means, wives, you have to learn how to enjoy it. How to enjoy it as much as he does. He wants for you to enjoy him in the same way that he enjoys you. And to love you in this way. It's not just about getting off. And one of the things that I love is I get to have this conversation with couples all the time. And one of the things that I love is when I say this to a wife, it's amazing to watch his eyes light up. I love it because he's like, for many of us guys, you don't even know this about yourself. You don't even realize about this yourself. And for many guys, they've said, I've never been able to know how to say it. But that's so true. I want her to feel loved in it. I want her to enjoy it the same way that I do. I want for her to enjoy me the same way that I enjoy her. And it's amazing to see their eyes light up. I love that. As we awaken to the truth that, no, this is so much more than just a physical thing. This beautiful way that we get to serve one another. And he wants to serve you in that way. But sex is complicated. Not the actual act. That's pretty simple. But relationally and inside of marriage, it's complicated. We come to it from different perspective, and we've got different hormone levels. There are studies where they've had hormone patches that they put on women for them to experience the hormones that men experience. And they freak out. Like, what in the world is happening to me? You feel like this all the time. And he's like, yeah, that's my life. Like, that's how we feel. And we come at it from different sex drive positions, and we come at it from different awareness positions, and men typically are much more sexually aware of themselves and their bodies, and they know what feels good to them much faster than women does. It takes more time for women to figure that out. We come at it from different perspectives as far as how it's attached to love. Women tend to attach affection more to love, and men tend to attach sex more to love. And so it can get really complicated. But women, you have to understand he wants to be able to love you through this, which means that you have to learn how to enjoy it. You have to put in the work of figuring out, know what feels good, and to be able to communicate that to him. For some of you, you've been married for years and you've never actually talked about sex. Because again, just like we talked about in week one, it's just supposed to come natural. You're just supposed to know. Would we stop believing that lie? For most of us, the extent of our sex education is a really awkward class in like sixth or eighth grade, right around there. That taught us really nothing. Definitely didn't talk about the emotional aspects of sex. Maybe a book that our parents read to us when we were 11 or 12, about 5 pages that kind of explained anatomy and the things that go into that. Outside of that, everything else that we learned about sex, listen, this is so true. For most of us, everything else we've learned about sex, we learned from the fool in our class who had sex first. The person who had the least amount of character, who had sex first and then told the rest of us about it. That's the person that we listened to. That's the person who educated us. And then we live with this weight. We live with this weight you're just supposed to know. So you never talk about it. Never learn about it. And we can't figure out why we're so bad at loving each other. Wives, husbands, you have to talk about it. You have to talk to one another about what you like and what you don't like. You have to talk to one another about what makes you feel loved and what doesn't. You have to communicate. And wives, it means the world to him when you do the work to be able to figure out what feels good and then you communicate that. And what you're doing in that is you're giving him the opportunity to be able to serve you in this really unique way that God created for us to serve one another in marriage. Husbands, in order for this to be your reality, you have to call yourself back to the truth that this isn't just a physical thing for you. For you to go into it to serve. And I know culture has told you this, and maybe even inside of your marriage, you've allowed it to become this. And I talk to couples and they'll tell me, yeah, we have sex until he has an orgasm and then that's it. No, this is about how we serve one another, which means, husbands, you need to do the work, not just of listening to her, but do the work of making sure that she enjoys it as well. I'll never forget the moment that I was walking out of my wedding right before we got into the car to drive away. And there's very little that I remember about the end and the reception. There's a few little memories that I have here or there, but there's one memory in particular that stands out that I will never forget, because just as we're about to get into the car, my uncle gave me this massive hug. And my uncle is huge. He's like 6'3". He's built like a linebacker. He's a big farmer. And he wraps his arms around me. When my uncle wraps his arms around you, you just disappear. And he wrapped his arms around me and I just disappeared, and he leans over and he whispered in my ear, and I thought that he was going to say what everyone else had said. Oh, you guys are a beautiful couple. Oh, you're so in love. It's so great to be here. Have a great honeymoon. All those different things. He leans over and he whispers in my ear. He says, "You make sure she climaxes first." It was my uncle, so I almost threw up. In that moment, what my uncle was trying to do was to teach me this passage. And in a really powerful way, that's exactly what he did. He taught me this passage. He says, no, sex is how we serve one another inside of marriage. And what he was saying in that moment is, you make sure you serve her well. And husbands, this means that you have to do the work to serve her well. One of the commitments that Anna and I made early on is that we weren't going to have sex where just one of us had an orgasm. That no matter how long it would take, we were going to serve one another, that we were both going to have an orgasm. And that took a lot of communication. And that took a lot of learning. And not just once, because you change over time. And so it takes a lot of communication and learning throughout the journey together. And talking to one another, being honest with one another. But if we're going to serve each other well, we have to do that. It has to be a part of the way in which we engage each other sexually. Guys, this also means that you have to eliminate pornography. Pornography will destroy this in your life. Pornography makes sex entirely physical. It will make sex just about getting off. It perverts your desires. All of a sudden, you begin to have perverted ideas of what sex looks like. It perverts your attraction. All of a sudden, you're no longer attracted to her. You're attracted to this other thing that's not even real, and you want her to become something that she's not. I absolutely love this passage. It's found in Proverbs chapter 5. It says, "May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love." I absolutely love that passage. He's saying, listen, what I want for you is for you to be able to be satisfied with the one that you love for the rest of your life. And the imagery there, that may her breast satisfy you always. May your fountain be blessed. Yes, the fountain is an image. And he says, this is what I want for you. But when you let porn into your life, when you're not careful with what it is that you allow to come into your life, it screws that up. And it's not just porn. It's the music that you listen to. It's the stuff that you watch. If you're not careful with that, it puts your sex drive into hyperdrive. And all of a sudden, rather than you being attracted to the one that you love, you become attracted to all these other different things. And it robs you of the beauty of what God wanted for you inside of your marriage. And if you're here today and porn is a part of your story, afterwards the elders are going to be down here. We want to help you with that. And you can get it back. You can get it back. But you have to do something about it. We have to shift the way that we look at love, and when love moves from something that's about me to something that's about serving them, it drastically impacts sex. I'm telling you, when you go into sex, when you have two people who go into sex with the mindset of, I want to serve and love the other person, it can become remarkably beautiful. Remarkably beautiful. And that's exactly what God wants inside of your marriage. But our vision has to shift. And I know as well, as I say this, for some of you, you're thinking to yourself, yeah. And typically when I talk to single people about this, they'll say, yeah, that's why it's so important that you have sex before you get married, so you can find out if you're sexually compatible. And then if you're sexually compatible, you'll be able to serve one another in sex really well for the rest of your life. Listen to me. Sexual compatibility is based on flawed logic. Sexual compatibility is based on a massive flaw. It's based on the idea that you are sexually static. It's based on the idea that if you are sexually compatible with someone right now, that you will be for the rest of your life. That's just a poor understanding of human beings. You're not going to stay the same. Your sex drive is going to change. Your body's going to change. You are not static sexually. It's based on, the entire idea is based on flawed logic. It doesn't make sense. It will not hold up. If you have any intellectual integrity, you see it. It doesn't hold up. Because here's the thing. I don't know. This may come as a shock to you. And this may be really hard for you to hear. But you need to hear it. Okay? You need to hear it. All of us need to hear it. I don't know if you know this or not. But for 90% of us in this room, we are all going downhill from here. All of us. And I know some of you are here and you're 33 and you're saying, yeah, but I'm the 10%. No. It's just for the teenagers who happen to be in the room that I only made it 90%. they've got a couple more years. If you're here as a teen, you got a couple years, and then you're going to be in the same boat, okay? And it's going to change, and you're going to have kids, and it's going to change, and things are going to happen in your life, and it's going to change. About a year into our marriage, Anna developed endometriosis. Endometriosis makes it exceptionally painful to have sex. And all of a sudden, sex drastically changed for us. Every time I had sex with my wife, it hurt her. It intensely hurt her. And it got to the point where it took sex off the table. Listen to me. You're not going to have great sex for the rest of your life because you find somebody that you're sexually compatible with. If you want to have great sex for the rest of your life inside of your marriage, then you find someone who has the character to love you when sex is off the table and has the character to work through it when those things happen. And you say, sex is off the table. That's never going to happen. It's going to happen a lot. I talked to you in week one about my grandfather. They couldn't even sleep in the same bed, let alone have sex, my entire life. What's going to happen when that happens? You want to find someone who's not going to turn to porn. Find someone who has a character to be able to control their sex drive. When the doctor walks in and says, listen, she's about 3 months pregnant, but it's getting risky. Next 6 months, she's on bed rest. No sex for the next 6 months. No sex for the next 6 months. What the? For those of you who don't know what I was about to say, it has to do with sex. What's going to happen then? What you want, someone who has the character to be able to control their sex drive. What you want is someone who has the character to be able to work through those things. What you want is for someone who has a vision of sex that aligns with God's vision of sex. That this is how we serve. And for you to decide, no, I'm going to develop a vision of love and a vision of sex that's about service. And I'm going to serve the one that I'm eventually going to spend the rest of my life with. I'm going to serve them by reserving myself for them. I'm going to serve them by making sure that I'm able to serve them later by giving myself to them 100%. And I know some of you are here and you're saying, that ship's already sailed for me. Doesn't matter. You can start to serve them now. They can change for you now. And as you're dating, for you to serve the one that you're dating by saying to them, I'm going to make sure that you can love the one that you marry, whether it's me or whether it's someone else. I'm going to make sure that you can love the one that you marry in that special way that God has designed for us to serve and love each other by not taking that from you before we get there. See, God's idea of love is about serving. It's not built around me. It's built around them. It's about stepping into someone else's life and saying, how can I give myself to serve you? And he says, you have to understand, I created sex to be a unique way that we serve one another inside a marriage. And you can make it less than that if you want. You can make it less than that if you want. It's going to lead to all sorts of destruction and pain. You never experience the fullness of what God wants it to be. But if you allow him, he can lead you into something better. He can lead you into something better. He is not trying to steal from you. He is not trying to hold out on you. He is not trying to keep you from what will make you happy. No. No, he went to that cross for you. From beginning of the story, he has been planning to serve and love you. You can trust him. You can trust him. And if you will, you will find that he is faithful and his ways are much better than our ways. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for all that you've taught us about love. I thank you for how you challenge our vision. I thank you that your vision didn't begin with you, but it began with the ones that you love. Thank you what you've taught us about service inside of love. Father, I pray for those who are here that they would let go of the lies that we've been told about love and sex, that they would trust you, that they would trust you and follow you into the life that's truly life, into the life that's abundant. Even when the lies tell us, that you're holding out, that we would trust you, that we might experience that and that the truth of your love would be known to the world around us. In Jesus' name, amen.